Blog Talk Radio.
Hey folks, Timothy Peters, driver of the number 17 Red Horse Racing Toyota Tundra. You're listening to The Pit Stop with Tim Despain.
Live from Talladega, you're in The Pit Stop with Tim Despain and Stephen Wilson on the Speedway Digest Radio Network, Blog Talk Radio, Stitcher Radio, and your Apple Podcast.
Live from Dega Nation, I'm Tim Despain. You're in the Pit Stop Radio Show. Stephen Wilson has the night off. Standing in for Stephen is my good friend, NASCAR and NHRA writer and freelance photographer, Mr. Stan Creekmore. Let's welcome in him into the Pit Stop, Tim Despain and Stephen Wilson.
Let's get ready to rumble!
Stan, how you doing tonight, bud?
I'm doing pretty good, other than it's a little bit cool where I'm at up in Erie, Pennsylvania right now. It's already snowed here, and it's about 38 degrees right now, so it's a cold.
Oh, goodness, Stan. I mean, it's a little bit cool here in Talladega, Alabama, too, but just to probably let you know and make you a little bit jealous, Suzanne and I are going to head down to the beach Thursday morning for Thanksgiving. So we're going to go into a little bit warmer weather. I think it's going to be in the low to mid-70s while we're down there.
Make sure you take a sweater. But you should have a great time.
All right, Stan, I want to thank you again for coming in and filling in for Stephen Wilson. He's on a boat floating around there in the ocean somewhere after he got through covering everything down there at Miami Homestead, Stan. But if I can, let me go ahead and bring on our official reverend of the show, Mr. Reverend Joe Bubico, and let's get the invocation and everything going on, Stan. I know we got a lot to talk about. But let's bring my good friend, Reverend Joe Bubico, in the Pit Stop. And I'm going to call it with Tim Despain and Stan Creekmore tonight. Where's my button? Here it is. Reverend Joe, how you doing tonight, bud?
I'm doing okay, but you're never going to get straight of who you're with or anything else. I know you. You've been staying the same Stephen Wilson so long, you don't even know who you're talking to. Stan, hang in there. He'll get through it.
I will try.
I don't know what you're going to do there, boss man. You got some time to. This is going to be a busy night for you tonight. But then after that, things slow down, and then you got to get into the silly season. So, I think you'll have fun. I think we'll all have some fun this winter.
Exactly, Reverend Joe. And Stan Creekmore travels to a lot more tracks than Suzanne and I and Stephen and Anne-Marie. And also Stan covers a lot of NHRA stuff, so he stays very busy. I'm pretty sure he's ready to take some time off, Reverend.
Well, he's got to dig out of the snow before he can go anywhere, so he'll have to wait a while. I know. I lived in the Northeast for 37 years, but why don't we get this thing started? Let's pray. Lord, we come before you tonight, and we thank you for a great racing season we just had. We ask your protection over all those who are traveling today. We also ask your protection over all those that will be going to races this weekend. Watch over them. Let them not over-celebrate, and be with them. Be with us all this week as we give thanks. Thanksgiving. Thanks for all you've given us from day one. And we've so much not appreciated it from the beginning of time. But Lord, please forgive us Be with us. Watch over us all. And thank you for sending your son, Jesus Christ, to die for us so that we wouldn't have to be condemned. All we had to do was believe. And we thank you for that in Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen, Reverend Joe. Invocation. And Reverend, we want to thank you very much for being a part of the Pit Stop Radio LLC, the team there with Stephen Wilson and everybody, all of his writers there with SpeedwayDigest.com. It's been a blast, and now we're going to take a little bit of a break. But Reverend, we're still going to keep doing shows. We're going to do some shows all the way up to, you know, next year. I don't know what Stephen has lined up for his Christmas. I don't know if we're going to take off that Tuesday or whatever, but normally we always try to take a break, and I will let you know if we're going to take a week off or a couple of Tuesdays off. But, Reverend, thank you very much. Tell Miss Betty thank you for everything that she's done for the sport and everything you've done for the sport. And, Reverend, let everybody know where they can follow you at on social media and your website.
Well, I want to wish everyone a happy Thanksgiving, and God bless you all. You can reach me, first of all, by phone at 951-232-7630 anytime you need me. Our website is ontrackwithjesus.org, and our email address is ontrackwithjesus@aol.com. So get a hold of us any which way. We're also on Facebook. It's Rev Joe Bubico, and you can find me easy enough. It's always good to talk to everybody, and we had a good time two weekends ago down in Phoenix, met up with a lot of great people. It was fun talking about it last week, and it's always been great to be on the show. So I feel as honored as you claim you are by having me, but I'm awful honored to be part of your show. So you and Stan and Stephen and Suzanne and everyone, have a wonderful holiday.
Happy holidays to you, Reverend Joe. And again, thank you very much for everything that you do for the sport and for our radio network. We really do appreciate y'all.
We'll talk to you next Tuesday.
Talk to you next Tuesday, Reverend Joe. Have a good one, bud.
You too.
All right, bud. Stan, that's our Reverend. Reverend Joe's been with us for a long time. Stan, we made it through 2016.
Yeah, we did, barely.
We made it through 2016. And I don't want to put you on the spot, Sam, but did you happen to make it down to Miami, or was that one that you couldn't make it to?
Well, I couldn't make it to Miami only because the something hit my radiator on my van when I was leaving Phoenix, and that killed the motor completely and unfortunately made for a long couple of days, and it just ended the trip to go down to Homestead.
Oh, daggum. You didn't get no debris on the grill or nothing, did you, Santa? It overheated. That wasn't what it was, was it?
Oh, it went right straight through the grill, right straight through the radiator, and blew the engine up in all in about 30 seconds. It wasn't funny.
Man, I know. That sounds about like my luck. But anyway, Stan, you can stay on as long as you want to. We got a lot to talk about. I want to get some of your perspectives on everything, but I'm sort of going to jump ahead. Sam, Steve and I, we normally talk about, you know, we go through the trucks, Xfinity series and the Sprint Cup series, and we play some Media Center audio stuff. But I want to jump to, if I can, Stephen, you know, like I said, was at Miami Homestead Speedway. The 48 car of Jimmy Johnson, they were experiencing a little bit of coming through tech there. And I went ahead and went on NASCARmedia.com, and I printed off the schematic of the A post and everything that they were looking at. Well, there's what I know you know a lot more about this than I do probably, but there's what they call that filler plate. That filler plate comes up the A post and comes along the top side of the roll cage there above the driver's window and the window net. And from what Stephen told me, me and him was texting back and forth when they were looking at that, which obviously, it put Jimmy Johnson at the tail end of the line starting the race. Can you talk a little bit about, or can you explain a little bit about what they might have been looking at as far as that filler plate that they were discussing?
Well, what you're looking at is aerodynamics, okay? You want to get the best possible movement of air across that A post that you can possibly get to give you the downforce that you need desperately to get the best possible run that you can get. And I'm sure that NASCAR simply looked at it multiple times, decided that it was not exactly where they wanted it to be, and that was the biggest part of the problem, is here's something that's not exactly where we want it to be. It may be an advantage to you. It may not be an advantage to you. But we've got to be absolutely sure. So, you know, I'm just saying it in the clean, simple ways. It's about aerodynamics. It's about downforce at that particular point of the car, and as such, you know, I think NASCAR looked at what was he within the allowance, but nevertheless, was he so far into the allowance that it questioned whether any other team could compete against it in any way, shape, or form? And that's a tough thing to say, but NASCAR has shown in the past that if they find something that they think, even though it looks legal, may give a huge advantage to a race team, they don't allow it. And the example of that is Jeff Gordon. So, you know, just a tough deal.
Yeah, exactly, Stan. And just I wish I could sort of throw this picture out there for everybody to see, Stan. I know you have looked at it. I've looked at it. I've dissected it. And, you know, like I mentioned earlier, that little filler plate, what you call it, comes all the way up the A-post across the top side of the roll bar and almost all the way back to the C-post. So, basically, what you're saying, they probably slid that filler plate out a little bit to maybe get some air downforce on it, correct?
Yes, that's what I believe. Yeah, and that would have made a huge, huge difference. People don't necessarily think about it, but if you want to get a huge difference, it only takes about a 16th of an inch and change to get that different distance away from other race teams. So, you know,
NASCAR has to be very careful on what it allows and what it doesn't allow in that respect.
Yeah, exactly, Stan. And you know, being a crew chief, that is your job to try to push the envelope, Stan. You know, try to get everything you can, and you know, being in that gray area, if you can get away with it, yeah. Which that's why we got multiple rules. You know, you got the NASCAR rule book also. I mean, there's so many things that have been changed, but that's the crew chief's job to try to see how far he can push that gray area.
Well, I would go past the crew chief in this situation. A crew chief may, in this case, Chad Nowes, may eventually have said, yeah, give it to us. But I'll bet you it was the engineers team that looked at the issues and said, hey, if we do this, we're still within the rules, and it could be a major improvement for us that no one else has. And that would be the key. No one else has. And so Chad South only said yes or no. I think the determination of whether it was something good or bad from a team standpoint was from the engineers. They looked at it and said, this is what we need to try.
Yeah, and you can't blame them, Stan. You cannot blame them.
Oh, no.
But just to put
– no.
Yeah, that's what they're supposed to do. But, listeners, the number to call in is 215-383-3681. I'm here with Mr. Stan Creekmore. And, Stan, I'm going to go ahead, if I can. I want to start with the NASCAR Camping World Truck Series. We'll talk a little bit about that race. You know, the NASCAR Camping World Truck Series and also the NASCAR Xfinity Series, their inaugural chase races was this year. And I think NASCAR done a really great job, Stan. The NASCAR Camping World Truck Series, race number 23. Was the 21st annual Ford EcoBoost 200 down there at Miami Homestead Speedway. The time of the race was 1 hour, 32 minutes, and 57 seconds. Your average speed was 129.747 miles per hour. Margin of victory was 2.175 seconds for Mr. William Byron. Like I said, he finished P1. Round out the top 10, P2 was Tyler Reddick. Johnny Sauter was your champion, P3. Kyle Larson from NASCAR was P. Oh, I got to get my glasses on, Stan. Johnny Sauter, P3. Sorry about that. Kyle Larson, P3. Kyle Larson, P4. Kyle Larson, P4. Daniel Hemmett, my good friend, was P5. P6 was Daniel Suarez, Matt Crafton, Christopher Bell, Timothy Peters, and Cole Custer round out your top 10. Stan, let's take a little break here and listen to a little bit about what Johnny Sauter, Gallagher, and crew chief Joe Shearer had to say in the media center there at Miami Homestead Speedway.
We are now joined by the championship-winning owner and crew chief, Mr. Maury Gallagher, owner of GMS Racing. This is GMS Racing's first NASCAR Camping World Truck Series Driver Championship since the team made its series debut in 2013. And for Mr. Joe Shearer Jr., our Drivers Champion winning crew chief, this is your first NASCAR Camping World Truck Series Championship as well. Your previous best standings finish was a second with a driver by the name of Johnny Sauter in 2011. So, gentlemen, congratulations. Talk to us a little bit about what this means for you as a team owner and a crew chief.
Well, thank you all very much. Appreciate the time. Hard to put into words. Competitive sports like this at the highest level is something that is rare and difficult to do. Certainly everyone aspires to it, but attaining it is you don't quite understand until you get there how hard it is. I can't say enough about the investment by Joe on my right, Johnny, the whole team. Mike Beam certainly has to be at the head of the list with the credits. Mike's been 43 years in this business, has worked with some of the best all time. He brings an intensity that is second to none, an intensity you need to bring it home. And Tom Ackerman, working with him, we worked with ECR. Their motors were terrific this year. All the parts came together, but at the end of the day, Johnny had to deliver the goods. Starting, I think, 18th, was he 18th?
19th.
19th? Oh, sorry, I missed one. he worked it to the front and did what he had to do. That's determination to a fault. I couldn't be happier for Johnny and his family. I'm not that well informed on the backgrounds. I do know, having said that, that the Sauter family has been in racing for many moons, and I was chatting with someone with the NASCAR record book in mind and said this is the first NASCAR win for the Sauter family. So that I couldn't be happier for Johnny and obviously the rest of the team.
Joe, it's got to feel pretty special for you as well.
Yeah, of course. You know, me and Johnny have been together for years, and our families have been together for years, and we've, you know, raced against each other, and we've won a championship before, and we've, you know, just became best friends and worked really hard and been determined, and I'm, like, almost lost for words. This is, like, really huge and special, and as like Maury says in sports, it's amazing how hard it is and how long it takes to achieve your goals and stuff that you've been working for all your life. And when you finally do it, it's like a big relief. And I'm so happy to be with Maury and GMS and Mike Beam and Tom Ackerman and all the guys that work there. I'm so proud that they brought me into their organization and gave me and Johnny back together and it gave us a chance to do this. And I really got a good bunch of guys, and they worked hard, and working hard achieves these goals. And I'm so proud to be part of that gang. And I'm really lost for words. This is exciting. This is amazing. This is the top of the deal to win in NASCAR, and I'm flabbergasted.
Well, we'll go ahead and open it up to questions so you can have to put together a lot more words. We'll go up front to Zach first, then we'll go to Bob.
Zach Albert, NASCAR.com, from Maury. Johnny was super appreciative to you guys over the team radio on the cool down lap, and how easy did the deal come together to bring him to GMS, and what has he meant to your organization in just a short time being with you guys?
Johnny is just terrific people. We had talked about it actually 2 years ago about doing it, and it's been a building process for the last couple of years, and we felt that, and with the encouragement of Chevrolet, I might add, that we needed to bring a top quality driver in. I mean, we have good drivers. I think Spencer's shown up pretty good this year. Obviously, Ben Kennedy got into the chase and won. We've had Kyle Larson. He can pass for a driver. A few of those types. But Johnny was that kind of constant. He shows up with the experience, and I call him the old salt. And you just can't put a price on, you know, that kind of, I've been there, done that. He was terrific with the younger guys, couldn't ask for a better teammate. And, you know, it's an investment. You do it, and you hope to have the outcome we had. And so, you'd like to think that every investment pays off. It's hard in this business, but this one has paid off in spades. So, yeah, no, hats off to Johnny, and he'll be back next year, and you'll be seeing me about a year from now, I hope.
We'll go over here to Bob, and then we'll just keep going to the right.
Ago, 15 years ago, was there ever a point where you thought, man, Johnny's a great driver, he's going to win a lot of races, but he's just not going to win a NASCAR championship?
I guess I never really thought of it. We just always go race to race to win everything that we can, and we always give it 110%. So we just, it falls where it falls. We always try, but it takes a lot of effort to do this, and it takes a lot of people and the people that you surround yourself to get to this point in life. And thank God I got hooked up with, you know, Maury and GMS and all the guys. And me and Johnny always click. It's putting the rest of the people together that makes it happen. And we had this feeling when we came here, and we just kept working hard and kept working hard, and we achieved it.
We'll continue over here to the right.
Joseph Walken, frontstretch.com. Maury, when you started this team, did you expect to have this much success just 3 years into it, being able to recruit big-name drivers and expanding to a four-truck team?
Sure. Doesn't everybody do it this way? You know, I didn't know enough to know. A couple years ago, I couldn't spell car. You know, I think I'm on C now. I'm in the business of building businesses for the most part, and I've started a lot of companies in my life. And, you know, you have to go places that other people don't think you should go or can't go. And more importantly, you have to go there with the right people. And while I didn't expect to get to this place perhaps this fast, I certainly didn't think we would never get there. You know, it's just been a great process. We bought our facility in Statesville. We 160,000 square feet. I think if you looked at us now, Mike's put together, some people walk in there and say we have a small cup shop. We built 25 frames this year. Those frames that you see out there running around on the track are the handiwork of Mike Beam and his fab team. Put those components together with good crew chiefs, obviously good drivers, ECR motors, you know, you got to have the good power. And, you know, it's come at a reasonable pace. I think the other thing, too, is when I got started a couple years ago, I was frustrated as hell about not having good stuff compared to particularly the Toyotas out there, the Fords. In 14, when we got going, it was tough sledding, new nose and everything on the trucks. So, you know, it's surprising, but not that surprising, particularly when you get to know Mr. Beam. You ever get into that grill of his and the intensity factor that comes with him? He was not easy to talk to tonight before the race. So it's all hat. By the way, hats off to NASCAR. I don't, again, a bit of an outsider. This format is terrific. You know, I'm glad they brought it to us this year. We all got to experiment with the caution clock and those things, but I think NASCAR has done a great job putting all this together and keeping the drama, well, what, to about the last second or third lap. You didn't know who was going to win. You can't do much better than that. So, anyway.
Any additional questions for our championship? Oh, we'll go right here to Chris, then we'll go right back over here to the right.
Chris Knight, catchfence.com. Congratulations to you guys. Maury, I know you're really busy out in Las Vegas with the Legion Air and whatnot. How involved are you with the day-to-day operations of GMS Racing, being as busy as you are?
I'm a distant owner, so to speak. I'm certainly talking to Mike a lot about structural stuff. You know, we're frankly, a lot of the discussion now is about what we're doing next year. But Mike, day-to-day, that's his call. I mean, he's put the package together. He's put the personnel together. He's the man among men that's done this day-to-day with the approach and the like. Certainly, I've been able to help him in a lot of structural business things that would kind of follow my bailiwick. But, no, hats off to Mike, Tom Ackerman, you know, building wind tunnel, all the technical work to get it done. It's really been his doing. We didn't trash you too bad.
It wouldn't be the first time. So
Before we get to your question, I want to welcome to the stage our 2016 NASCAR Camping World Truck Series champion, driver of the number 21 GMS Racing Chevrolet Silverado, Mr. Johnny Sauter. Johnny, you finished the 2016 season with 3 wins, 12 top fives, 19 top tens, 1 pole position, and 1 gigantic trophy. Talk to us about tonight and what this championship means.
Well, this championship means a lot, obviously. I don't think it's completely sank in quite yet, but, you know, it wouldn't be possible without these two guys sitting next to me, that's for sure. I can remember last September when I flew to Las Vegas and the Gallagher family brought me to their house and cooked me a wonderful meal and said, this is our goals and this is what we want to do. And you know, when I went and checked out the shop and saw the, you know, their ultimate vision for where they wanted GMS Racing to be, I knew it was something that I wanted to be a part of. So what a remarkable year to start off with a win at Daytona. You know, you mentioned 19 top 10s. I can remember 3 of those races we were in contention to win. One of them running second and the other and blew a right front tire and had decent speed all year. And we really hit our stride here at the end of the year when it really counted. I'm not going to lie. Today I was a little bit nervous when we qualified 19th, but I knew that we'd race good. The trucks are just so good. All the product that they're building at GMS Racing is just good stuff. And, you know, it doesn't hurt to have Chevrolet power under the hood. And we executed like we needed to. Had a solid pit stops tonight. We made some positions up on the racetrack like we needed to. And here we are. Great year. Couldn't be more proud.
We'll continue with questions. We'll go to the far right, and then we'll go to Jerry.
Tom Bowles, Front Stretch. I had a question for Maury, but Johnny, since you're here, congratulations. What do you think you had the past year at GMS? You spent so many years driving for such a solid team in Thor Sport. What do you think you had in this year that you didn't have at Thor Sport where you were able to get it done here?
Well, I mean, it's not just one thing. It's a lot of little things, if you want to know the truth. You know, to be honest with you, when I talked to Mike Beam on the phone the first time, my wife was in the hospital having a baby, and I was in the parking deck talking to Mike on the phone about next year or the following year. So, you know, the killer instinct that Mike has, you know, all he says is, you know, I want to win and we need to kick their butts. And it's very motivating, you know, for me anyway. I like to hear that kind of talk. So having said that, you know, I think it was very important for me to get back in a Chevrolet. I felt very strongly about that, being a GM kid. So, but, you know, people is a big ingredient. I mean, there's just a lot of little things. I could sit here all night and talk about it, but it's just the whole package. I just felt very comfortable, you know, like I said, about meeting the Gallagher family and all this, and I'm not sitting up here blowing smoke. I'm telling you the truth. I felt very comfortable that night and knew that this was something I wanted to be a part of.
We're going to stay over here, and then we're going to come to you, Jerry.
Justin Albino, Front Stretch. For Johnny, last year when you announced this deal in October, did you expect to have results this quick?
Honestly, yes. You know, as I mentioned, you know, any successful organization in racing that I've ever seen, they surround themselves with people, people that, you know, work very hard and you know, do the right things, I guess, a lot of times. So, you know, I can sit here and say that I don't think I would have ever made this kind of move if I didn't feel comfortable with it. When you see what we're building, I've said this 1,000 times, but if you check out what, you know, GMS Racing in Statesville, North Carolina has to offer, I mean, the way that they're going about it, building our own chassis in-house, you know, hanging our own bodies in-house. Obviously, we had ECR horsepower all this year. You know, they executed on the pit crew with the Ganassi guys. I mean, all that stuff was just top-notch. So, you know, it took us a little while in the middle part of the summer to get it rolling. We were consistent, knocking down top tens and a few top fives here and there. But, yeah, I'm not shocked at all to be sitting here tonight. I feel that strongly about the people that we have.
We'll go to Jerry and then Bob.
Stan, that was Johnny Sauter there in the mini center at Miami Homestead Speedway after winning the 2016 NASCAR Camping World Truck Series Championship. And, Stan, it was really tight. Matt Crafton finished second in the points, Christopher Bell third, and my good friend Timothy Peters fourth. Johnny Sauter won it with 4,030 points, and then you go back to Timothy Peters, 4,024 points. That's a six-point difference, Stan. I mean, it was really, really tight this year, but
It was extremely tight, and, you know, I'd forgotten about something until just listening to him talk. The crew chief, Mike Beam, there's an individual who knows what it takes to win a championship all the way at the very top level. And so you have to feel great for the driver. But I think at the same time, you have to look at the car owner and you have to look at the crew chief and say, hey, these guys wanted to get back to racing as they remembered it 15, 20 years ago, where it was very important what a crew chief did. It was very important what a car owner did. And that's how you won championships. Is you beat everybody with a crew chief and with a car owner who was willing to make the sacrifices they needed to make to put you, you know, in the championship chair.
Stan, I mentioned it earlier. You know, this is the inaugural chase for the National Camping World Truck Series also. Do you think NASCAR hit it right, or do you think we need to tweak anything? I think it's the perfect scenario, Stan.
Well, and I'm going to have to agree with you. There's been a lot of questions about whether it was right or wrong. So, you know, people are thinking that way. And no, did William Byron win? No. Did he have the best season overall in the sport? Yes. But he switched manufacturers, you know, at the tail end, you know, on what he's going to do in the future and everything. And that is a major thing to announce, and it affects how you eventually perform and what you may or may not win. And I think that announcement cost him a true chance at the championship. As far as how the status of everything else, it worked perfectly. I think that it made the truck series far more visible over the final end of the year than it ever has been in its entire time that it's been part of this NASCAR world. It just did an excellent job. Excellent job.
I will definitely agree, Sam. And, you know, I'm going to go ahead and say this. It's probably going to my age and your age, but, I mean, you know, back in the day, sometimes when the final race, not really talking about the NASCAR Camp 4 Truck Series, but the NASCAR Sprint Cup Series, before they was going to Miami Homestead for Ford Championship Weekend, when they were going to Atlanta for the final race of the year, there was sometimes back in the day, Stan, that we had a champion named either one or two races before we even went to that race.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And there were a few times where it came down to that final race. Just ask Bill Elliott. You know, he'll tell you all about that. But, yeah, there were times when it was what the team did all year long that put them in position to be the champions, and they would score it before the end of the season. And it is still important what a team does all year long, but it's far more critically important what they do in those final set of races than any other time before in history.
Exactly. Stan, let's take a little short break and sort of gather our breath and think about what we're going to talk about next, which I know we need to talk about the NASCAR Xfinity Series and NASCAR Sprint Cup Series, and we've got a lot to talk about. But we're going to take a little short break live from the Pit Stop Radio here in Talladega, Alabama. I'm Tim Spain alongside my good friend and CEO of StanCreekmore.com, Mr. Stan Creekmore. We will be right back. Shortly, Stan. We're going to take a little quick one, bud. See you on the flip side.
Yes, sir.
Let it fade to black. Let me run my fingers down your back. Let's whisper, let's don't talk. Baby, leave my t-shirt in the hall. Like a needle finds a groove. Baby, we'll remember what to do to drown out every distraction. It's time we made it happen. Strip it down, strip it down. Back to you and me, like you used to. By your little bear feet. Let it out, tell me right now. Everything I need in them white cotton sheets. Dirty dance me slow in the summertime heat. Feel my belt turn loose from these old blue jeans. We both know that we lost it somehow. Let's get it found, strip it down, down. I wanna drop the cell phone now and let it shatter on the ground. They ain't holding nothing, these two hands, until they're holding you again. Oh, strip it down, strip it down. Back to you and me, like it used to be, when it was an old back road with an old school beat. Cowboy boots by your little bare feet. Let it out. Dirty dance me.
Hey folks, Timothy Peters, driver of the number 17 Red Horse Racing Toyota Tundra. You're listening to The Pit Stop with Tim Despain.
We're back live from Talladega. I'm Tim Despain alongside of my good friend, Mr. Stan Creekmore. Stan, I apologize for what I said earlier. I'm so used to having Stephen on. I owe you a big apology. Stan Creekmore, rider for NASCAR and NHRA. Stan, it's been a long season, but the NASCAR Xfinity Series, they also crowned their champion, Mr. Daniel Suarez. The NASCAR Xfinity Series was also at Miami Homestead Speedway for race number 33, the 22nd annual Ford EcoBoost 300. Daniel Suarez won the race and won the 2016 NASCAR Xfinity Series Championship. Ty Dillon finished second. Elliott Sadler finished third. Ryan Blaney fourth. Fifth was Austin Dillon. Sixth was Justin Allgaier. Seventh was Kyle Larson. Eighth was Brendan Gaughan. Eric Jones finished ninth. That's another one that we need to talk about. He had a lot of wins, too. Stan just fell a little bit short. And right at your top ten was Eric Almirola. Stan, your take on the inaugural NASCAR Xfinity Series chase for their deal there. I think NASCAR hit that one right on, hit the nail on the head again there too, bud.
You know, they didn't just hit the nail on the head. This, when people look back at this sport in 20 years, when I'm looking at it from a grave site and you're looking at it from a comfortable bench somewhere on a porch, people are going to see this championship. Daniel Suarez, he is the starting point of this sport truly becoming an international sport. There are going to be kids all over the world, not just the United States, not just Canada, but all over the world saying, I can do that. If I try hard enough, if I show the ability, I can do it, and I know I can do it because Daniel Suarez, a nobody from Central Mexico who didn't have anyone really looking at him in the very beginning, proving that it doesn't matter where you come from in this world, if you have the ability to drive, you can win a championship, and he did it. And God bless Jimmy Johnson for winning number seven and everything, but in my opinion, Daniel Suarez's championship is far greater than Jimmy Johnson's seven-time championship.
I will agree, Stan. I mean, you take a young man, like you said, out of Central Mexico, bring him over here, put him in a Joe Gibbs car, and it didn't take that young man long to figure it out. I mean, he come right out of the Joe Gibbs stables, and he was driving the stew out of it. And you and I think you and I spoke a couple times about it, that everybody needs to keep their eye on this young man, Daniel Suarez. And I think it means a lot to the sport for an outsider. I don't really mean that as an outsider, but an outsider to come in to a southern-bred sport and win a championship in one of the national series tier series. Man, I mean, that was just – that made for an awesome story.
Oh, yeah, an absolutely incredible story. And it gives you also a look at why Joe Gibbs is an important person in this sport. Joe doesn't care where you come from. He doesn't care what country you're from. What he cares about is, do you show the ability to get a job done? And that's what he cared about in football. It didn't matter where you were born or anything like that. It mattered, could you get the job done? And Daniel Suarez has proven, because I remember meeting him at Phoenix International Raceway in the K&N West race, his very first year there, and he could barely speak any English. And I remember saying to myself, that kid has got awesome opportunity. All he has to do is work hard, and he will be successful. And he's proving my thoughts right, which makes me feel good. From that standpoint, you know, is that, yeah, I'm still looking at this and still understanding what I'm seeing in the whole nine yards. And you know, it would be interesting to hear from all of your people in your area who are listening to this show, what do they think about Daniel Suarez? Funny car.
Exactly.
I mean, funny car. Yeah, he's a funny guy. A champion, a Mexican American champion. Because remember, Mexico is Central America, so he is an American in some way, shape, or form, just not the North American that we are, you know, and he's just an incredible, incredible individual.
Exactly, Stan. And everybody around here, international, Stan, we have listeners in Australia and Canada, call in and let Stan and I know. What do you think about Daniel Suarez from Mexico winning his first championship in a NASCAR National Series event? I mean, you know, like I said, you know, you mentioned history with Jimmy Johnson, which we're going to get to that later. But, yeah, the number to call in is 215-383-3681 out of Tennessee, Spain, alongside my good friend Stan Creekmore. Dan, let's listen to a little bit about what Daniel had to say in the media center at Homestead Miami Speedway after winning his first NASCAR Xfinity Series championship.
Okay.
We're joined now by the champion crew chief, Scott Graves. Obviously, Scott, exciting. You've been here before with a different driver. Tell us a little bit about the difference between your championship last year with Chris Buescher and what you had here today with Daniel Suarez.
I mean, I guess this one is a lot different. Last year came in with a points cushion, totally different mentality of how to run the race. And this year we knew we had to be fast from the get-go. Had to get track position up front to start the race, had to stay there. Really felt like we had to win the race to walk out of here with the championship. So, like I say, a lot different.
Well, kind of to that point, tell us a little bit about how the chase format impacted the race today compared to last year's championship.
I mean, I feel like it's pretty exciting. I know from my point it was pretty stressful to sit there and go through that. I mean, all four cars were right there for so much of the race. So it was close. You know, it came down to, I feel like, having you know, the set of stickers there at the end when a lot of others had to put some scuffs on. And a lot of that just comes down to luck at that point, but pretty exciting from my end to be part of it.
Well, congratulations again. Questions from the media. We'll start over here, Kyle, and any other questions? Second, over to Bob, and then we'll go to Jim.
Kyle Magda, ESPN Albuquerque and the Racing Experts. Scott, can you just talk about coming into this race this year and last year? Like what David said about the championship format, did you sleep at all? Were you thinking about all the possible scenarios this time around, knowing that your driver had to win or possibly win the race to win the championship this year?
Yeah, I was a little nervous for sure coming into the weekend. You know, last weekend was nervous because we knew we had to get through that race to be here. And then knowing what we were going to have to do here today, you know, just the unknown, I guess, of not knowing how it's going to turn out definitely makes you think about it a lot. Thought about, you know, yesterday, last night, what we needed to do and where we needed to be in the race. So, yeah, definitely I'd say it's more stressful this way than the other.
Okay. We'll go over to Bob, then to Jim. And then Chris Knight.
Can you talk about, Daniel's obviously improved a lot this year. Would there have been a point this year, during this season, where you maybe wouldn't have had the confidence he could hold people off like he did tonight?
Early on in the year, that was some of our struggles really was starting the race where we needed to be, and a lot of times you'd see us fall back and kind of struggle throughout a race and then get it right and come back. Yeah, what he showed tonight, I mean, I thought was really impressive. We didn't have the best long-run car, had a really good short-run car, so he would use that and get out front. But, you know, he was holding them off when he had to. And you know, the thing that we talked about is his strength is just remaining calm, taking care of the car. And you looked at a lot of those times we were out front, and those guys were pressing us behind. Well, they kept hitting the wall. And, you know, he just kept driving his line and didn't hit the wall. So that's really what he just focused on was running his race, taking care of it, and made sure we were there at the end.
Okay, we'll go to Jim, then Chris, then Kenny.
Jim Hunter, Motorsport.com. Two quick questions. First, what were you thinking when you saw the 14 cars stay out at the end of the race?
I don't know. I mean, everyone's got to have a shot to win the race and try to get there however they need to do it. A tough situation, but... you know, that's part of racing. I mean, there's 40 cars trying to win a race, not just four trying to win the championship. And that's the unique part about this format is it's not just, you know, the four cars going against each other. There's a whole field, and they all want to win a race, and I can't fault them for it.
And kind of following up on Bob's question, it really seemed not only that the performance kind of got better as the season went on, but can you talk a little bit about Daniel's development as a driver while you worked with him this season?
Yeah, I mean, it's when you look at the start of the year and, you know, he might struggle on restarts at times. He really worked on that. You know, it's amazing to work with him because he's always wanting to learn. You know, he knows he's relatively new to the sport and that he has a lot to learn. So he takes that feedback, you know, very, very well. So, we talked about restarts early in the year. We got to get better on restarts. That's affecting us. So he got that and got the restarts. And then, then we moved on to, all right, now we got to get our starting balance at the beginning of the race right so that we're not falling back throughout a race and having to work on it and get our way back. We knew we need, you know, to win races, you got to be able to stay up front, maintain that track position. And so we worked really hard on that and made a lot of progress there as well. So he's, like I say, he likes to learn. He soaks it up and he's shown a lot of improvement.
All right, we'll go to Kenny Bruce and then over to Reed. And we are now joined by the owner, driver champion, Joe Gibbs from Joe Gibbs Racing as well.
Kenny Bruce with NASCAR.com. Scott, sort of along those lines, did you see Daniel's confidence pick up after the Michigan win? Did that make any difference whatsoever in his approach and demeanor at the track?
No, definitely. You know, I even felt like before that, I mean, we'd been so close on a lot of weekends, showing so much speed, and something would happen during the race, and we didn't get there. And he'd almost felt like before that, you know, he was starting to question a little bit. So when he won at Michigan and the way he did it, I mean, it definitely, I think that was kind of a good, you know, it was a turning point. And then you saw through the rest of the year a lot more consistent, a lot, you know, stronger races. So I definitely think that helped.
All right, we'll go down here to Reed Spencer and then back to Chris Knight.
This one's actually for Coach. This team has accomplished a lot of milestones with Daniel, but you have a chance to accomplish one that's pretty special tomorrow, I would say, and that's to win two championships with the same sponsor, possibly, and one that's relatively new. What would that mean to the organization?
I got to tell you, like I said yesterday when we were talking and we were in here, our sport, what's really different, and I can't emphasize this enough, is our sponsors. Because other sports, you're going to play them, you don't have to have a sponsor. But over here, we know we do. And to think that we sat down really 2 years ago with Aris, one of the most accomplished businesses. Bob Stangione, Bruce was here tonight. Peter, the whole group was here. And for them to have a chance to be a part of this, I think that's really what's special about this sport and what I love about it. It's those relationships. And it's you sit down and meet with them when you think about it. I met with Bob at the Atlanta airport, and we sat in a room in there and talked over things. And for him to be willing to step out with their company and, you know, support us with the resources that they have, just a huge step for him. And then for us to be able to have a night like tonight for them is just really special. And then tomorrow we'll be back out there with Carl and have a chance. But I can't really express how important that is for us, because that's what we survive on. And so they're really a partner and an integral part of this. I called Norm Miller tonight. He was on that car. We had Stanley Black & Decker. FlexVolt was on that car for a race. Juniper, another technology company, was on that car. And for all of them, they were all here. And so that's so important for us. I can't emphasize enough. And Daniel's a great representative. I think the thing about drivers here, the athletes we have here in NASCAR, what's special about them is they represent corporations. And when you stop and think about that, huge corporations have a lot at stake. And for them to represent them in the right way is so important for us. And so I think that's a unique bond. And Daniel is so good with them and all the things that he does and interacts with them and their employees. So I appreciate you mentioning that, because it is so important to us.
All right, we'll go over to Chris Knight. And over here to the left after that. And we are, of course, joined by our champion, Daniel Suarez.
First night, catchfence.com. Congratulations to you guys on the championship. Coach, I was just wondering if you could talk about your first time that you heard about Daniel Suarez and what made you want to bring him to Joe Gibbs Racing, and then I'll follow up.
Yeah. Well, what happens in our sport, as everybody knows, you start out in the smaller series. Daniel started out in go-karts. I didn't know anything about him, but obviously raced in the Mexican series down there, and I had a big supporter in Carlos. They came up, Can-Am series. And then I always remember I was at my office, and I got a phone call one day, and it was from FedEx. And they obviously did a lot of work with Carlos Slim. And they said, would you host a meeting? They want to have a meeting. And I said, who's that? They said, Carlos Slim. I went, what? And you Google that, and you go, oh, my gosh, what's he want to meet with me for? So we had a great discussion, went down and visited him. And then that's one of the great things about our sport, the people you get to meet. And it's been an awesome thing. I thought that's 2 years ago and for us to be here tonight. But anyway, Daniel came up to the Mexican series, then K&N, and then, of course, some truck. And we saw him coming out of that. And Jimmy Morales and Carlos were so sold on him and his talent that it made a big impression on us. And so we started with the truck series, and obviously it showed up right away. And now we go to Xfinity, and then the next step, obviously, would be Cup.
Daniel, 3 years ago, you finished third in the K&N E-Series points, and today you're a NASCAR Xfinity Series champion. Would you imagine that, looking back?
It's hard to believe. It's hard to believe. But when you are part of our organization like Joe Gibbs Racing, and you have a group of guys led by Scott Grace, that obviously he's a great champion, just 2 years in a row. It's just really good. I'm just very proud to be part of this family, of this team, They've been like my family in the U.S. As you guys know, I don't have my real family, my mom and dad in the U.S., so they are my part of my American family. I just live a few miles from the shop, and I go there almost every day because I really enjoy to be there. And I learn a lot being there, learning about the car, learning about everything with Scott, and you know, just being more connected and building that chemistry. I feel like Scott and I, we have come a long ways. In the first half of the year, we were good, and in the second half of the year, we were great. So that's something really good. I'm really looking forward for a future. But for now, I think I'm just very proud of the performance that Scott and the guys and Joggy Racing, they brought to this race. They brought my favorite car. That's the car that I won Michigan with. That's just my baby, and we got it here, and we won the championship. So I'm just very proud of everyone in the shop, all the guys that they don't get to travel in Joggy Racing, obviously everyone that travel every weekend with us. All the hard work definitely pay off tonight.
Okay, go over here, and then.
And Stan, that was Daniel Flores, Latin America driver, won his first NASCAR Xfinity Series champion. Through the Drive for Diversity that Brian France says he had a lot to do with. But Stan, before I move on to the NASCAR Sprint Cup Series, I didn't mention this to you. You and I were talking here in the screening room, but the late breaking news came out yesterday that Greg Biffle is going to leave Jack Roush. I got the PR email. Do you have any idea why Greg is leaving, or anything you can let our listeners know?
He's left for the same reason that Matt Kenseth left, for the same reason that Carl Edwards has left. Unfortunately, short of engines, Roush Fenway Racing has been very poor in their chassis situation. And it got to the point where, you know, when you're 47, I think is his age. When you're that age, you cannot afford to sit around and hope your team figures out their problems for but so long. And I have received a hint that he already has a ride set up for next year. With JTG Racing, with them going to two teams up from one. So I think the opportunity for him just presented itself, and he said, "Hey, got to take this. Got to do what I'm doing." So you know, I love Jack Roush. I think Jack Roush is an awesome individual. But I think that the situation he has with Fenway controls the budget tremendously, and they make mistakes. They just go down some paths that are not the proper paths, and it causes big issues.
Right, and you heard it right here. Breaking news from a good friend, Stan Creekmore. And Stan, before we go into the NASCAR Sprint Cup Series, correct me if I'm wrong. Greg Biffle is the only driver that could possibly. He won a NASCAR Camper World Truck Series championship. He won a NASCAR Xfinity Series championship. And the way NASCAR has everything worded now, you have to declare what series you're going to run for the championship in. So Greg Biffle is the only driver. If he wins a NASCAR Sprint Cup Series championship, he's the only driver that is eligible to be that number one person to win in all three series, correct?
Oh, my gosh. And I was just reading something. I think there is actually another individual.
I didn't know that.
And I can't put my finger on it right now. No, I didn't mean to put you on the spot. I wanted to say Keselowski suddenly, but I don't think Keselowski won the Truck Series Championship as a driver. He won it as an owner, but not as a driver. So it could definitely be that Greg Biffle becomes the only driver to win all three, at least for now, anyway.
Yeah. Until they change the rules again, Stan. Yeah.
Yep. Oh yeah. Well, I know that Bobby Labonte was looking very carefully at becoming a full-time driver on Craftsman Truck Series. And if he does become a full-time driver and he would win a championship, he would also have a Busch Series championship and he'd have a Sprint Cup Series championship. So, I mean, Bobby Labonte has the chance if he finds the right ride. And he and Biffle are close in age. Yeah.
There you go, Stan. I forgot all about that one. Stan Creekmore with all of his good stats there. Stan the man Creekmore.
You're too nice.
Thank you, Stan. You're very welcome. Stan, let's go on over into the NASCAR Sprint Cup Series. Race number 36, the 18th annual Ford EcoBoost 400 there at Miami Homestead Speedway. We made history. We no longer call him six-time. We call him seven-time. Mr. Jimmy Johnson won the race. The time of the race, 3 hours, 7 minutes, 10 seconds. Your average speed was 128.869 miles per hour. Margin of victory for Jimmy Johnson was 0.466 seconds over Kyle Larson. Kevin Harvick finished third. Logano fourth. McMurray fifth. Kyle Busch sixth. Matt Kenseth seventh, A.J. Allmendinger eighth, Denny Hamlin ninth, and ran out your top ten. What a hell of a run for Mr. Michael McDowell in the Thrivent Financial Chevrolet. Stan, we made history. He tied Richard Petty and the late great Dale Earnhardt Jr. Dale Earnhardt Sr. What's your take on it, bud?
You know, it's absolutely incredible, and yes, we compare him to Richard Petty, who won his seventh championship before I was a reporter on the sport. We compare him to Dale Sr., and I covered most of Dale Sr.'s career and all but his first championship. But I almost want to say that there's another driver that belongs in that group, even though he didn't win seven championships. And he didn't win seven championships because NASCAR changed the points policy and everything. And that's, of course, Jeff Gordon. Okay, I look at Jeff and Ray Evernham, and I think, God, if they could have stayed together as long as Chad Nowes and Jimmy Johnson have stayed together, I think they could have easily gotten to seven. Seven is absolutely incredible, and the fact that he won five of them in a row makes him even that much better than Richard Petty and Dale Sr.
Yeah.
Because they'd never won five in a row in that respect. And it was that was just how the rules were at that point in time. Chad Nowes had the rules seriously under control. And something a lot of people don't know is that by the time they'd won their fourth championship, NASCAR was working very much behind the scenes to get Chad Nowes onto their team as the director of the series versus being a crew chief. And Chad Nowes said, no, I'm not giving up my driver. I'm not giving up what I'm doing. I'm staying where I'm at. And every time NASCAR thought they had them for some kind of cheating situation, they'd find it instead on somebody else's car, not on Chad Nowes and Jimmy Johnson's car. So it has a lot to say about just how close they were in the rule book, just like Ray Evernham was in their time. in oh, seven, gosh. That's like 16-time funny car champion. You know, John Force, the number is absolutely incredible. Boston Celtics, how many championships have they won? You know, the Pittsburgh Steelers have won a ton of the Dallas Cowboys have won a bunch of championships and everything. So the number is really, truly incredible, and it shows how two people, two individuals, because the crews did change throughout the time, but how two people molded themselves together and made it happen.
Exactly, Stan. And, you know, you mentioned a big thing there. Those two people, Chad Knauss and Jimmy Johnson, they have been together the whole deal. And I think I seen somewhere on social media or somebody emailed me or texted me something. Correct me if I'm wrong. Jimmy Johnson and Chad Knauss have agreed to stay together to the end. Am I right?
You are right. Absolutely. And they're only saying it because too many people were coming at them trying to break them up, trying to, you know, boy, if I can get Chad Knauss away from you all, you know, then I can win championships and everything. And I don't think it's just Chad Knauss all on his own. It includes Jimmy Johnson as well. And I think they know that. And yes, everything I've seen and heard and from Jimmy and from Chad is that they're good for the rest of their career in NASCAR. And probably farther than that even.
And that's unheard of in our sport too, Stan. I mean, something like that. I mean, yeah, just like you said. And, I mean, you know, you go back to Robert Reiser. You know, talk about Robert Reiser there with Jeff Gordon back in the day. I mean, you know, they really clicked too. I mean, but just like you said, Stan, I mean, Chad Knauss and Jimmy Johnson, there's chemistry there and all that. But, Stan, let's listen to a little bit about what Jimmy Johnson had to say in the media center at Miami Homestead Speedway after his big win there and clinching his seventh championship. Let's listen to a little bit of it, Stan.
Okay. Now welcome the champion of the 2016 Sprint Cup Series, Jimmy Johnson. Jimmy, tell us how you feel coming in here after what was obviously a very, very eventful evening.
Wow. just overwhelmed. I mean, I had this crazy, weird calmness through the last couple of weeks and then even through the race amongst all the chaos we dealt with and the fact that we ran, like, you know, behind those guys all night long, fifth, sixth, wherever we ran. There's just some calmness that was in me. And then we restart in the 22 and the 19 wreck, and I'm like, oh, okay. You know, we've got a shot at this thing. What? I don't know why I've been so calm, but maybe it's in the cards. The next restart works out well. We get the second, and I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. You know, this there's really a shot at this thing. So then I get the restart of my life at the end. I hit clear off of turn two, and it just all, like, I got the goosebumps going down the backstretch. I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. I look in the mirror and the 22 is fading. And I don't know where that calmness came from. I mean, I want to say that the dedication of the hashtag 7 to little Ricky, there's something in all of that. But there was just something really interesting and different about my calmness and the relaxed nature that I had in the car. And I didn't know what the outcome would be, but I was very content and peaceful with whatever was coming my way. And then it ended up being the greatest thing in the world. So it's just wild. I don't know if I answered your question. I went off on a tangent, but there you go.
All good, Jimmy. We'll start over here with Mike. We'll go over to James and then to Zach. Dan and Mike.
Mike Embry, Auto Week. So when do you get number 8?
I knew that was coming.
Now, on the restarts, you've seen Joey make great restarts all year, and you saw what he did with Carl. Were you concerned there, or did you just get a, like you said, start of the restart of your life? You just moved away quickly, and there was never a threat.
Oh, so the last one. Yeah, the last one, he actually got to me before the stripe and didn't have a choice but to push me, which was interesting. I was ready for him to bail out, but the way his run timed out with me, he didn't have a choice but to push me. And I could see the 42 kind of fading by, and his run was kind of over at that point. So I was just hopeful the 42 wouldn't run me tight through one and two. And he, you know, was very aware of the championship situation and left me space and room. And I heard the, you know, the magic word clear, and couldn't believe that it was unfolding as it did.
Go to James, Zach, and then Dan Gelson.
Joseph Walken, frontstretch.com. Jeff Gordon said that you and Chad are the best he's ever seen in his NASCAR career. What does a remark like that mean for you going into the future?
You know, it's something I take a lot of pride in. You know, loyalty loyalty is a huge thing with me. And to have, you know, we've had our bumps in the road, but he's a brother, and I'm so proud of him and so thankful that whatever drew us to one another and created this opportunity for us to start the 48 team and work together happened. It's amazing. I would not be here today as a seven-time champion without Chad Knaus. He deserves so much praise and so much credit for my success, for this team's success, for the success of Hendrick Motorsports and where it is and what's going on with it right now. So, and over the last 15 years, I mean, yeah, it's crazy to say that. I guess I'm getting old, but you know, he's something special.
Okay, we'll go Zach, Dan, and then Bob.
Zach's over there, but that's
oh, sorry.
It's been a long day. Hey, Jimmy. Kyle Magda, ESPN Albuquerque, and theracingexperts.com. I actually have two for you, but the first one is with the 2013 championship, is there any way where we could see the return of those trophy hats for this one?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, that was a pretty cool hat. I don't know where it is. I think we missed our chance.
And then the follow-up, just being in this format, I mean, what was it like going into today's race? Being under this current format, first time that you've been in the final four race since NASCAR started this?
It's different for sure. To come in with equal points and know that you got to beat the competitors. I don't know, in some ways, took a little stress off because it's pretty simple what you had to do. Although I looked at their rear ends most of the night and wasn't able to mix it up with them. You know, I think this format creates a lot of stress, a lot of drama, and we certainly felt like, I'm sure the world felt like anybody but Jimmy Johnson was going to win the championship with 20 to go, and then it changed so quick with a green-white checkered at the end. So, you know, it's a pretty crazy format, to say the least.
Dan, Bob, and then Dustin.
Dan Gelson, Associated Press. Jimmy, you had the helmet, the photographer, you ran 7 miles, right, last night? Ran 7 miles.
You know, I skipped it. I'm lazy. I did. I know.
Okay.
I had the best of intentions, and then the sun started to set, and I'm like, you know, I'm going to eat some pasta. Sorry. I'll buy you all beers. Where's the beer? Let's bring the beer in. Sorry. I'm a failure. Sorry. I got 7 trophies now. I mean, shit. No, I had the best of intentions, and then I got really lazy. I'm like, and Chad's wearing me out. You know, don't wear yourself out. Hydrate, eat. Like he tells me every, you know, stop on the radio to hydrate. So I didn't. It was tough. Well, I'm so lazy.
I also didn't run 7 miles last night either.
We got that going for us.
You had the commemorative helmet. You had the photographer. I mean, did you Did you feel it? Did you know that this was the year, way back in, when the chase started? Or is that
no.
Just,
no. I mean,
all that
the summer, no chance. Chase started to build some hope. The helmet was out of respect to Dale and Richard. And then some calm, peaceful confidence showed up after Martinsville. And that calm, peaceful confidence has stuck with me through, you know, an okay race in Texas, a race we should have won in Phoenix, and then 395 miles here, and then uncorked itself. I don't know. Just a wild scenario.
Stan, your take on Jimmy Johnson tying Richard Petty and the late, great Dale Earnhardt. Jimmy just mentioned the season started off a little bit. You know, he got that win early, but then the season started off a little bit slow. I mean, on my fantasy racing league, I did not have him picked to be the champion. But he come along. Hendrick Motorsports had some bumps in the road. Just sort of talk about Hendrick Motorsports and how they come along, if you can, Stan.
Well, I think what Jimmy's showing everybody is he's not a youngster anymore from that perspective, and they're not allowed to jump as far ahead of other teams as they could, you know, even just 5 years ago, 6 years ago from that standpoint. So I think that he and Chad really put their heads together along with their engineers. They saw what other members of Hendrick Motorsports were doing and said, hey, we've got to try that. We know what we had was working for us, but it's not working as well anymore. We've got to try these things. And you're right. You know, Jimmy at midseason did not look like he had what it would take. And I think what people were seeing and maybe not realizing is that was a group that a lot of races were more than anything, they were tests for them. They were testing out new equipment, trying to find out what the best stuff they could possibly put together and hopefully have a run at a championship, and found it. They found what they needed. Now, did they need that caution desperately? Oh, yeah. They needed that final caution very, very desperately in order to win this race. But once they got it, they were prepared for it, and they showed that they had the quality to get the job done.
And Stan, before we jump off of here, the number 78 car, Furniture Row Racing, Martin Truex Jr. I mean, he was on fire, and all of a sudden, the like you mentioned, the wheels just run off. And you take Joe Gibbs Racing. Joe Gibbs Racing has been dominant all year. Well, then you talk about Penske. Penske with the 22 of Joe Logano and the 2 of Brad Keselowski. Talk a little bit about all these teams, right, you know, sort of about how you think everything evolved toward the end there that just didn't really click.
Well, I think from Joe Gibbs' standpoint is that the drivers – privately, not publicly, but privately, were fighting. And they weren't cooperating to just see that one of them could win the championship. I think that Carl Edwards was doing the best he possibly could to stay out of the fighting and everything, but it still was occurring. As far as the 78 team, I think that they got in trouble with NASCAR a couple of times. And I think NASCAR was even tougher on them from an inspection standpoint. And that negative can hurt a team's effort. And I think it hurt their effort a little bit towards the end there and just took them out of the chase from that standpoint. But once again, with Jimmy Johnson, it's just like they never gave up. They never gave up, and when that one opportunity was there, it came at the right moment, and they took advantage.
Exactly. The stars aligned, and The old saying a few years ago, the golden horseshoe was there, wasn't it, Stan?
Oh, yeah. And, hey, fans need to remember this, okay? They need to pay attention carefully. When I say the name Matt Kenseth, when I say the name Jimmy Johnson, you're talking about drivers that are over the age of 40. And in today's current time zone, they're pretty much at the end of their careers. Now, it's hard to say that a seven-time champion is near the end of his career, but in fact, he is. When you look at all the youngsters who are 18, 19, 20 years old, when they're 24, like Joey Logano, when they're barely 30, like Brad Keselowski is, and I didn't mention Penske earlier, those teams are going to, and drivers are going to take control of this sport in the very near future. So fans need to understand that Matt Kenseth, Jimmy Johnson, some of those people, they're putting out way more effort than they really were thinking they would be putting out at this time in their racing career, and they're getting where you pay for it. You know, on Mondays, you pay for all the effort that you put out as you try to physically get ready for the following week. So I'm sure they're all very happy that was the end of the season.
Yeah, Sam, you bring up a very good point. You know, Stephen and I, we've talked about it week in and week out. You've got, just like you mentioned, you got all these drivers that are about the same age. You know, you got Tony Stewart coming out. He's run his last race at Homestead Miami Speedway. And there's so many young guys coming up. And where are we going to put some of these guys, Stan? And I want to get your thoughts about, are we going to, you know, we're bringing William Byron up. And where are we going to put some of these young guys? Are we going to, is some of these, I'm trying to think of the word of it. Sort of going to put some of them into sort of the K&N Pro Series stuff and develop them. But, Stan, you brought up a very good point, and I want to get your perspective on it because I've already got Stevens. Where do we start these young guys, and where do we bring them up to? You know, because you don't want to bring them up too fast. Because you bring them up too fast, you know, it's not a good deal.
Well, careful how you say that. Because sponsors don't want a 45-year-old driver. 45-year-old drivers don't sell product. 18-year-old drivers, 22-year-old drivers, 24-year-old drivers, a 30-year-old driver, they sell product. And they may not paired, but you bring them up, i.e. Kyle Larson, okay, brought up way too fast. He needed at least another year in the Xfinity Series before they brought him up. But where is the room for the William Byrons of this world and the Daniel Forezes and such that are coming? Matt Kenseth's not going to be around another 10 years. Jimmy Johnson's not going to be around another 10 years. Dale Jr. is not going to be around another 10 years. Greg Biffle's not going to be around another 12 years. A.J. Allmendinger's not going to be around another 10 years. The list goes on and on. Carl Edwards, maybe 10 more years left in his career. Maybe not quite that many. Denny Hamlin struggles medically to stay in the sport. He could easily be gone in 2 to 3 years. So there's room for youngsters that sponsors want in race cars and say, hey, they'll learn what they need to learn. Let's just get them up there. Let's get them selling our product for us. Let's make this investment valuable. That's hard to take, isn't it?
there's so much going on. It's sort of like a crapshoot, you know, just throw the dice and see where they're going to end up. But I do agree with your point there. You got all these drivers that are the same age that they're going to be coming out, But then again, like you said, you brought Kyle Larson up, and your point was they brought Kyle Larson up too quick, and I will agree with you. But he sort of blossomed out of that. He got into that, and you have a very good point, Stan. There's going to be spots open. It's just going to be bringing them up. And, Stan, you've been around in sport as long or longer than I have, and the sponsorship deal. Whenever a team owner or a team wants you to drive their car, it's always what are you bringing with you? They want you to bring the sponsor with you, correct?
Yep. Yep. There's very few car owners that are actually in total control of the sponsorship. There's no doubt about it. And you know what? I gotta get the right words for this. You look at rookies now, okay? And all the rookies are under 20 years of age in the last 5, 6, 7 years. And I can remember when Jeff Gordon was a rookie driver at the Sprint Cup, not even the Sprint Cup level. I'm talking at the Busch Series level. Okay, running for Rookie of the Year in the Busch Series at age 18. His competitor for Rookie of the Year that year was 33 years old.
Wow.
And went on to win a Busch Series championship a couple of 3 years later, and did eventually win in the Sprint Cup Series, or went up to the Sprint Cup Series level and didn't get a win, but he got a couple of poles and everything. His name, David Green. But
yep,
see, there was Jeff Gordon, 18 years old, David Green, 33. And David Green was more representative of the age of rookies at that time. Dick Trickle, when he was a rookie, was in his 40s, late 40s. As a rookie driver, you know, the youngest rookie I can remember prior to Jeff Gordon was Ricky Rudd. Ricky Rudd was actually 18 years old, 19 years old in his rookie year in the old Winston Cup Series.
That's amazing how times have changed.
Yes, it's incredible.
That's amazing. It is incredible. And Stan, I know we've kept you way over your time. We're going up on an hour and a half. But, Stan, I want to get your thoughts on next year. And I'm probably putting you on the spot because I ain't even thought about it. What do you let me ask this question. Who is going to take the title sponsorship whenever Sprint comes out? I've heard some rumors. I don't know if I want to say them. I don't know if you want to say them, but we don't have long to the Daytona 500, and NASCAR does not have a title sponsor for the Cup Series. Have you heard anything?
The only thing that I've heard is that it's going to be a Comcast-owned company,
okay.
And Comcast owns NBC. Comcast owns Xfinity. Comcast does a lot of business through NASCAR now. As far as actual names go, I got to be honest with you, I haven't heard a single name.
Okay.
So if you know, you can spit it out.
Well, if I find out or if I hear from my sources, I will shoot you an email. But I've heard basically about the same thing you have. And it's coming down, you know, it's getting close to where they're gonna have to spit it out, Stan. But I think whatever they got going on, they're not worried. I don't think NASCAR and Brian Fance, Steve O'Donnell, I don't think anybody's worried about it. So maybe we're here in the next couple of weeks, Stan.
Well, I hope so. And for the race fan, too, I want to be very careful with what they think they know as far as Sprint Cup Series, as far as the company Sprint stepping aside after so many years. They're doing this because
the corporate headquarters there in Kansas City is not going to be as in total control of the company as they used to be as far as budgets are concerned. They've agreed to split up the budgets into regional areas. Regions decide what they're going to sponsor and what they're not going to sponsor. So I've been told by the Sprint Cup people, you may see some Sprint Cup races. That'll be the Sprint Cup 500 versus, you know, the Sprint Cup series. He said, we still have some of our regions that want to stay heavily involved in NASCAR racing. So we may see Sprint still hanging around doing some things, but they're just not going to be that national sponsor.
Exactly. You heard that straight from here from Mr. Stan Creekmore. And again, thank you very much, and we look forward to maybe you joining our team next year and coming on whenever you can when you're not at, when you go to a track or just whenever you want to. And, you know, like I said, I want to thank you for filling in for Stephen Wilson, which is out in the boat in the middle of the ocean, and I'm jealous. But, Stan, if you want to, go ahead and let everybody know where they can follow you at on social media and your website, and let everybody know what you do to promote our big sport of NASCAR and also NHRA.
Well, I'm building a new website, stancreekmore.com. It's a struggle right now, but I'm working on it slowly but surely. I still do some Twitter stuff. It's Stanley R. Creekmo. Not enough letters for my R and my E in that respect. And as far as the NHRA concerns, I'm doing a lot of stuff on the NHRA side because those people are absolutely fantastic people. It's what I remember NASCAR being 30 years ago. The fans can just step in. Seeing a driver, getting an autograph, getting a picture with a driver is simple and easy, and the drivers are all ready to talk and be interviewed and stuff. And, you know, Ron Capps, I told you this earlier, I forgot. Ron Capps won the Funny Car Championship this year. This is his 20th year in the sport, so he's tried for 19 years because his first year was not in a funny car. 19 years to win this championship. He's been second four times. And the only other driver I can remember who did something, it took him 19 years to do it. He tried and tried and tried. He'd finished second. He just couldn't get it done until finally he did, and that was Dale Sr. at the Daytona 500. And Ron Capps' championship in Funny Car is amazingly similar to Dale Sr.'s win in the Daytona 500. When you talk to him, he still has a hard time believing that he's gotten the job done. And he's just an extremely respectable person who actually had one wish that did not occur last year. One single wish had to do with Tony Stewart, Eldora Speedway, in a Camping World Truck Series race at Eldora Speedway. He couldn't find the right to be able to race there to make Dodge happy and everything on the funny car side happy, so he couldn't run it. But it is still in his mind that he wants to be competitive in a Camping World Truck Series race at Eldora Speedway.
Dan, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Thank you. That's awesome. Stan, thank you very much for filling in for my sidekick, Stephen Wilson, while he's floating around in the ocean out there on the boat. And I want to thank you very much for everything that you do for our sport of NASCAR and NHRA. And don't be a stranger. And from Suzanne and I, Stephen Wilson, Anne-Marie, to you and yours, you have a happy Thanksgiving and a Merry Christmas. And we will talk to you later. Dan, I appreciate you very much, buddy.
Tim, thank you all very much, and I wish you a great Thanksgiving there on the Gulf Shores, and I also hope that you all have a wonderful Christmas, and that goes to all the people that you just mentioned. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dan. We'll talk to you later, bud. That's my good friend, Stan Creekmore,
He covers NASCAR, NHRA. We're going to haul a good night from Talladega, Alabama. We'll see you next Tuesday.
Shaking hands with the man who grips the gospel gun. While in quiet prayer, the smell of dinner on the ground fills up the morning air. Ain't nothing sweeter around. I can almost hear my mama pray, oh Lord, forgive us when we're down. Another sacred Sunday. Probably always will. And on the old town square, under the barbershop pole, they set me up in the chair when I was 4 years old. I can almost hear my papa saying, won't you hold still, son? Stop squirming around. Another Southern Sunday's coming. All the lights in the houses one by one go out. Softly in the distance nothing stirs about. And the night is filled with the sound of a whippoorwill. What a Sunday in the South.